coming in late. That's sorry where folks are coming in late on the news today. I should say good evening to RBN listeners. This is the Barton Report from Republic Broadcasting. PJ Barton is my name. And we're here today on this Saturday, 29th, leap year day, 29th of February 2020. And as I say, it's the last day for women to propose to men, etc., etc. But there you are. But no, I was saying to Ken and to Dave, the technical genius is to keep us on air. We've had the fourth storm here, Storm Jorg, and the internet on this, for the first time in 3 years, going up, down, off, losing the internet here every hour for 5 minutes. But it may not happen at this time of the morning here. It's 3 a.m. here in the UK. But it's there's been shocking storms, and there's telephone exchanges flooded around the UK. So that's probably the reason I'm still on copper wire, but I won't be doing a live show next week because I'm moving. But the following week, the 14th, I'll be back, and I'll be on fiber optic cable. They've installed it for me already over where I'm moving way out west. But just to let people know that. But the other major happenings in the UK, you can see on the papers and on the Daily Mail website, Boris Johnson has announced his girlfriend, Carrie Simmons, is pregnant, and they are engaged. And, of course, he'll be getting married soon to her, as his divorce has come through to his second wife. And Carrie will be his third wife. Like, he's 55, she's 31. What's that, a 24-year age difference? But that's what's going on. And parallel to that is an gargantuan row between the 4'11" poisoned wife, Priti Patel. She's the Home Secretary in charge of all justice matters, the police, a large part of the courts, etc., etc., and immigration matters. But she's had a raging row whenever it's been known in the press since she became Home Secretary with the Secretary of the Department, Sir Philip Rutnam. Is it Rutnam? And I've sent a clatter of stuff to Ken. I didn't get to talk to him for the phone because our internet up and down today. But in a few minutes, Ken, if you can dig out, get it ready. I sent seven today. We won't get to them all today. There is a BBC thing headed Home Secretary. If you can find that one, tell me when you found it. It's only 2.5 minutes. But go into it, and down where the photograph is, it does play. It's a 2.5 minute piece for this very, very senior. Good on you. Yeah. Just get it ready there. I'll give you a little bit more explanation about it. Run down to the photograph, and where there's an arrow, that's the start of the 2.3-minute video. You can get that. Okay, good. Yeah. This guy, it's well known that Priti Patel and him were at each other's throats since she became Home Secretary. Very, very senior, probably one of the most senior civil servants in Britain. And she was running a campaign, a vicious disinformation campaign against him. And he resigned today, and he basically called her a liar. But Ken, this is worth hearing. Ken has the piece there, and this is his resignation speech, if Ken was to play that.
I have this morning resigned as Permanent Secretary of the Home Office. I take this decision with great regret after a career of 33 years. I am making the statement now because I will be issuing a claim against the Home Office for constructive dismissal. In the last 10 days, I have been the target of a vicious and orchestrated briefing campaign. It has been alleged that I have briefed the media against the Home Secretary. This, along with many other claims, is completely false. The Home Secretary categorically denied any involvement in this campaign to the Cabinet Office. I regret I do not believe her. She has not made the efforts I would expect to dissociate herself from the comments. Even despite this campaign, I was willing to effect a reconciliation with the Home Secretary, as requested by the Cabinet Secretary on behalf of the Prime Minister. But despite my efforts to engage with her, Priti Patel has made no effort to engage with me to discuss this. I believe that these events give me very strong grounds to claim constructive, unfair dismissal, and I will be pursuing that claim in the courts. My experience has been extreme, but I consider there is evidence that it was part of a wider pattern of behaviour. One of my duties as Permanent Secretary was to protect the health, safety and well-being of our 35,000 people. This created tension with the Home Secretary, and I have encouraged her to change her behaviours. I have received allegations that her conduct has included shouting and swearing, belittling people, making unreasonable and repeated demands, behaviour that created fear and needed some bravery to call out. I know that resigning in this way will have very serious implications for me personally. The Cabinet Office offered me a financial settlement that would have avoided this outcome. I am also aware that there will continue to be briefing against me now I have made this decision. But I am hopeful that at least it may not now be directed towards my colleagues or the department. This has been a very difficult decision, but I hope that my stand may help in maintaining the quality of government in our country, which includes hundreds of thousands of civil servants loyally dedicated to delivering this government's agenda. I will make no further comment at this stage.
Okay, I think that's the end of it there. Very good. That's a very, very serious... That's the first time a major civil servant resigned and gave a statement almost... It wasn't a press conference, but to the press and TV, radio, and attacked Priti Patel, his own boss, a very senior minister. But she is a nasty piece of work, Priti Patel. She's a Ugandan nation, the children of Ugandan nations who were kicked out of Uganda years ago. And they are Zionists, of course. And this is Priti Patel, who went on a holiday when she was a junior minister in Theresa May's cabinet. And she went to Israel on a holiday. Okay. She then went and visited the Israeli hospital. She then went and visited several ministers, which she had no authority to do. She was the foreign aid minister. That's what she was at the time, I think. And she went there and she promised Israelis all sort of situations and aid, etc., which she had no authority to do. And she got read out for it. But Theresa May didn't fire her. So this woman, she has form. She's very smart looking, but tiny, tiny, tiny. I believe they say she's about 4'11". But she is a nasty piece of work. And now this is a terrible bombshell for this government. And this will go on and on and on. And that's the same day Boris Johnson decided to announce his engagement and the fact that his partner, Carrie Simmons, is pregnant. And it's all over the Daily Mail. If you go onto the Daily Mail website, it's blasted all over there. But the two stories are devouring each other. So he's very stupid to announce it on this particular day if he thought he could bury this story. They are giving two stories equal coverage to press. So Boris is in trouble on that one. But we'll be playing things later on in the program, which Jeff Taylor very, you know, played some of the stuff in recent weeks because he's so fluent, so good, and puts out very good stuff. And if I come across somebody who's extremely good, I'll play their stuff. But this is a shocking, shocking carry-on. Where these two stories are running in parallel today. And also Boris Johnson didn't visit any of the flooded areas. 20 miles below me in Hereford here, there has been biblical, and I mean biblical flooding. The River Wye flooded and the River Severn. They're the two biggest rivers in the UK. The Severn is a very mighty river. It's wiped out Ironbridge, parts of Worcestershire, and hundreds of hundreds of thousands of homes badly flooded, roads closed. A month's rain in 2 days. And we have another minor storm today. That's why the internet is flashing away now, okay? It's been going down on me for the first time in 3 years. I have a very good system here. I'll have an even better system in 2 weeks' time. I'll have fiber optic. But that's what's going on today. But another thing that's well worth hearing, and Ken has it there, is that's more on Bloomberg was making ignorant comments about farming, about which he knows nothing. He may be a $60 billion billionaire, but he's a pig ignorant, and it was delightful to see... Even Elizabeth Warren, who's a piece of work, wiping the floor with a bigger piece of work, Bloomberg, on those debates. That was high comedy, like Ricky Gervais wiping the floor with Hollywood trash, like a dishcloth. But there's a piece there, Ken has it, I've sent him an awful lot of stuff today, Ken. Yeah, the Wyoming farmer blasts Bloomberg. It's only 2.3 minutes. That's well worth hearing. Here's the response from a Wyoming farmer who is a regular blogger.
I'm Mike Galloway, a farmer and a rancher in northeast Wyoming. Michael Bloomberg's comments about farmers shows he has no idea what goes into becoming a farmer, a rancher, or a caretaker of this land. We work 365 days a year in every weather condition imaginable and often by ourselves. We fix our own equipment, care for newborn animals, pray for more rain or less rain, get up before the sun, and go to bed late into the evening. We plan every year for the best and prepare for the worst. We research and learn new seed and crop developments and study the bull or semen catalog until our eyes go blurry. We put the seed in the ground, then we add water and nutrients at just the right time so we can produce more and more food every year off the same amount of land. We help a pregnant cow deliver her calf when she's too tired or the calf is too big. We administer medicines when necessary and help weak calves eat by placing a tube directly into their belly. When things go wrong, we shed a tear and then we go back to work. During calving, planting, haying, or harvest, there's no scheduled work hours. There's just a job to be done, and we stop only when the last bit of work is finished. We live off of one or two paychecks a year. We stretch every dollar as far as it can go, and we help our neighbors when they call, and they return the favor when we call for their help. We raise our children to be farmers, leaders, blue-collar workers, or anything else they could ever dream of, often on the same land that we grew up on. 12 years ago, I worked in an office. I had no idea how hard it was to be a farmer or a rancher. I never thought about it. The food was just at the grocery store. I now take pride in being a rancher and in raising the next generation of ranchers. I fight every day for this life, land, and animals. And I'll continue that fight until the day I die with my wife and my family right along with me. Michael Bloomberg, you have absolutely no idea what it takes to be a farmer.
Very good, very good. That's a guy, I missed his name there, but his family do regular vlogs about the difficulty and the pulling and dragging and farming. In fact, there's two outstanding vloggers who do video vlogs on YouTube from Wyoming, and I drove through Wyoming once. It's stunning territory, it really is. I'm just writing something here. It's very, very good. But Bloomberg, what a bunch of morons. I've never seen this, the Democratic Party make such fools themselves and display such ignorance and such extreme communist behavior. And Bernie Sanders is number one, who believes that half the world should introduce mass abortions to control the population, right? And total communist takeover of the country. The government run your life, right? And if they fail or the superdelegates rig the convention, it'll be Hillary Clinton that's pushed in again. I mean, it's absolutely woeful. But Trump would be incredibly incompetent to lose this election, although I do not like him and the things he has failed to deliver. He has not begun even to clean up the swamp. And we're hearing about the arrests and the threats. Nothing has happened. Hasn't laid a glove on the Clintons. Not a frigging glove has he laid on them. But talking about farming, I've been involved many years ago. And we have another Home Office creature who resigned, who was a key advisor to the government, Dr. Leung, a white guy from Oxford University, an academic. And he says one of the things he believes in, Britain doesn't need farmers, reveals leak senior emails. And I'll read some of the appalling stuff he's written. Britain is only 60% sufficient in food. 40% is imported. About 50% of that shortfall, 40, comes in from Ireland, a massive amount of food and finished products. And agricultural, food, consumer goods and foods, et cetera, and the rest from Europe. But one of the government's most senior officials has made an incendiary suggestion that Britain does not need its own farming industry. This is the extreme moron of a Remainer. In leaked emails obtained by the Mail on Sunday, powerful Treasury advisor, Imagine the morons who are just making decisions in government. Tim Lee, L-U-N-I-G, what a name, argues that the food sector is not critically important to the economy. What? And that agriculture and fishery production certainly isn't. This in the week and the year that Britain is taking back its fishing grounds, the biggest fishing grounds in Europe. And I come to that in a minute, where Jeff Taylor describes that very vividly. In his astonishing remarks, which this guy makes, which comes as the UK prepares to enter crunch post-Brexit trade talks with Donald Trump, Dr. Leung replies that the UK could follow the example of Singapore, which is rich without having its own agricultural sector. Singapore imports 100% of its food. It is totally at risk. What a moron this guy is. Powerful Treasury Advisor Tim Leung, they call him powerful, he's resigned now, argues that the food sector is not critically important to the economy. Those tensions at the top of government spilled over in an astonishing public fashion yesterday when, as we've just played, Sir Philip Rutnam, the top civil servant of the Home Office, resigned following a clash with Priti Patel, citing vicious and orchestrated campaign against him, which is correct. In response, Number 10 Sound sources branded Sir Philip Sir Calamity and posted a poster boy for failure. But it goes on to say, and this is a long article, Britain, it could be, this moron, Leung, is saying Britain could be like Singapore. Well, David Dubine will tell you what Singapore is about. And by the way, Dubine has moved back to America from Taiwan because of the coronavirus, and the Taiwan is not self-sufficient in food. So he had to make that decision this week. And he had to travel on an aircraft to do it, obviously, which is quite dangerous. Conventional aid claims we would import everything that we eat. Imagine being at that vulnerability level. A senior economist advisor to new Chancellor Rishi Sunak has agreed that Britain could become like Singapore. What a bunch of morons. Anyway, we'll go to the first break today, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
It's a sad loss. He died only there 5 years ago. Fantastic. Okay, but this... I'll read in between the next two short breaks. There's more rantings from this tosser who resigned, a senior official, a senior advisor. Oh, my God. Dr. Leung, L-E-A-U-N, Lunik, that's a good name for him. Astonishing comments came as the UK prepares to enter vital post-Brexit trade talks with both the EU and the US, where negotiations could be expected to fight with British farmers, although the industry has urged the government not to lower standards to allow cheap substandard products such as chlorinated chicken and other stuff from the States. Sorry, folks, we don't want food from the United States. Sorry. But Dr. Leung, a powerful voice in Whitehall, claims that the agriculture and fisheries industries make negligible contribution to the economy. What? 60% of food comes from the United States, and he says negligible. We just import it all and then get cut off and we starve to death. Imagine an academic having flown up his own rear end that badly. Huh? Last night, a bullish Boris Johnson said, "We have the best negotiators in the business," and he vowed to drive hard bargain. And I'm going to play some of that stuff now in a minute. With the President Donald Trump, which would trade smoked salmon for Stenson hats. yeah, little joke. Dr. Leung, an associate professor, that's not a qualification, professor, that's a backhander title, or the London School of Economics. That's the most communist school of economics in Britain. Hardcore communist. Most ex-journalists in the BBC are ex-The Guardian and were qualified at the London School of Economics. That's for the communist agenda. Andrew Marr, another git, is one of those. And this guy, Lou, also holds advisory positions in education and environment departments. Made his arguments in email sent last week to the National Food Strategy, the government's wholesale review of the British food system. He wrote, just by the way, something that really incensed me. I have a wood burner in the place I'm going to. They're going to ban burning coal and wet wood in this country in 2 years' time. Well, by God, myself and a lot of organizations will fight that. This is the UN taking over here. He wrote, food sector isn't crucially important to the UK, and agriculture and fish production certainly isn't. He pointed to figures suggesting that it adds just 0.5% extra value to the economy. What? Dr. Ilan then quoted the special tax break given to farmers, saying, "We know that supermarkets also made very little, and that lots of restaurants go bust." Well, that's a boom and bust business, the restaurant business. It always has been. In boom or bust economies, they go bust. I worked in the food, drink, tobacco industry for 20 years. I was a brand manager, launched products, recruited staff, had all the data, and did all that work for 20 years. And this guy is a total moron. Absolutely never worked in the real world. Not sure, he says, I buy a life. Not sure I buy a life is tough for farmers, easy for restaurants. I don't know what that's about. Prime Minister Boris Johnson speaks during Prime Minister's question in the House of Commons. When he was challenged by fellow members of the review advisory panel, he responded, "All I'm saying is that as a logical possibility, a nation or region can import stuff. We see that in many places for many goods and services, Singapore imports almost all its food." Yeah. That's why De Bine has gone out of the Far East. Germany, imports all its oil. Japan, all its planes and all its oil. Australia and New Zealand import all their cars, all their plants, other planes and other oil, while Iceland imports oil, cars, planes, etc., etc. Okay. Last night, a senior industry insider said, "If the UK is a fantastic place to produce food, and we have some of the highest standards in the world," that is correct. In a trade deal with the US, we face the prospect of imports of food produced to standards that would be illegal for our own farmers to employ. Imported food would be inadequate. Why would any advisor to the government seek to decimate our farming sector? Surely the first duties of any government should be to defend and feed its people. It seems to me that a country that cannot feed itself is no country at all. But a government spokesman said that Leung's comments were not government policy. Oh, really? How polite can you get? International Trade Secretary Liz Truss, and she's a pitiful individual, this one, honestly, God, will tomorrow announce that the UK is negotiating objectives for a transatlantic trade deal and is set to say it must uphold our high standards on food safety and animal welfare. Well, a trade deal with the US is about degrading, and the Americans buying up, they don't give really a toss about food. It's about buying up the remains of the defence industry. That's what the EU is trying to do with the behind-the-scenes defence agreements with Britain, which are not part of the trade deal negotiations. The National Farmers Union has been pressing the government not to relax standards, saying it would be morally bankrupt to allow chemically cleaned poultry, hormone-treated beef and genetically modified fruit and vegetables into Britain. Absolutely. Putin have made Russia an organic zone and glyphosate-free and Roundup-free and GMO-free. And the Ukraine is not running its own government. The Ukrainian living across the road from me. Very skilled woman, master tailor. But the Ukrainians don't realize what's going on in their own country. They're being rifled by the cluster of American multinationals, John Deere, the crowd for own Sun Valley. I'll come to their name in a minute. But there's a cabal of them go around the world together, and they're just rifling these countries, absolutely. Cargill, that's the company. But the National Farmers Union has been pressed the government, such FP. The union said it would be insane as the Farmers Union to sign a trade deal on that basis. Our senior economic advisor, Dr. Tim Leung, is a brain box with wheezes on everything from third-class carriages to paddling. I didn't realize that. Okay, Tim Leung's most controversial policy idea until today was to pull all government support from failed northern cities and encourage inhabitants to migrate south. Oh, God help us. They need to build up the northern cities. And another white elephant project being given the go-ahead, and I'm appalled at Boris Johnson for doing it. HS2, the high-speed rail to Birmingham and the north, which we do not need in the age of the internet. We do not need it. They need the cross rails in the northern cities to be upgraded and get rid of 1,500 railway crossings in America, in Britain, by underpassing or overpassing them, and to build up, repair the A and B roads. If you saw the state of the roads in parts of Britain and in Hereford, it's absolutely criminal. It's kind of normal to break a shock absorber a spring once a year or roll right off a tyre, which happened to me last year. Barmy, who's this? Barmy said, a furious David Cameron, who was Tory leader when Leung floated his, in a think tank report in 2008, rubbish from start to finish. Cameron added, I hear he is off to Australia. The sooner he gets on the ship, the better. Well, what the hell is he doing working in the cabinet office? Dr. Leung was not planning to immigrate, and 4 years later, he sailed into the heart of the Cameron's government as an advisor to Michael Gove. Well, that's pretty simple. Michael Gove being a suburban journalist, that's all the experience of life he has, a London wine bar creature. He now holds an unusual powerful position in Whitehall, with footholds in the Department of Education, Environment and Treasury, where he became economic advisor to the Chancellor just a week before Boris Johnson became Prime Minister last summer. Just don't know, we're going to a break. I don't hear the music. Previously, Leung's most controversial policy was the idea to pull all government support from Taylor of the Pacific and cover that. He's absolute deranged moron, absolutely. I mean, these people should be taken out and horsewhipped. And I see the people he's involved with are highly suspect, like Michael Gove, etc. But There's another piece. If we're clear of the brakes, are we clear of the brakes, Ken? I was going to play another piece. Okay. Okay, one of the things they're talking about all this of trade and agriculture and farming and things like that, I know, just touching on it. There's two things there from Jeff Taylor. The first one, Boris tightens the noose. It's 10 minutes and 5, 10 or 10.05, 10.05 minutes. Jeff Taylor, who's very fluent, is describing the latest part of these negotiations where Boris Johnson is laying down the law and he wants things to be, if they're not fully progressed by the end of June, he's going to walk away from the negotiators of Brussels. Jeff Taylor on Boris tightens the noose. That's the third one there I sent, I think, today. Okay. Jeff Taylor. Okay. Yeah.
Hello there. Boris Johnson has decided to lay down the law on the Brexit negotiations and has effectively brought forward the deadline from December to June. Firstly, as ever, please kick that YouTube algorithm up the jacksie by giving this video a big fat like. And this is my third video today, so please do check the other two out. Now, the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, has published the UK Brexit trade talks negotiating intentions today in a government document called The Future Relationship with the EU, the UK's Approach to Negotiations. And the real bombshell in it is the statement that the UK will not be extending the implementation period beyond the 31st of December and is committed to working in a speedy and determined fashion to do so, with an appropriate number of negotiating rounds between now and the June high-level meeting foreseen in the political declaration. The government would hope that, by that point, the broad outline of an agreement would be clear and be capable of being rapidly finalised by September. If that does not seem to be the case at the June meeting, the government will need to decide whether the UK's attention should move away from negotiations and focus solely on continuing domestic preparations to exit the transition period in an orderly fashion. So, if in the eyes of the UK government there has been insufficient progress by the time of the mid-year high-level meeting in June, then the UK could decide to just drop the talks and concentrate on making sure the country is ready to deal with the EU on WTO terms by January the 1st next year. On this, the document says, if it is not possible to negotiate a satisfactory outcome, then the trading relationship with the EU will rest on the 2019 withdrawal agreement and will look similar to Australia's. Now, in the political declaration at paragraph 141, it says, following the United Kingdom's withdrawal from the Union, the parties will convene to take stock of progress with the aim of agreeing actions to move forward in negotiations on the future relationship. In particular, the parties will convene at a high level in June 2020 for this purpose. And this meeting was probably the one that Brussels was looking at as the opportunity to argue for an extension to the implementation period for 1 or 2 years as laid out in the Withdrawal Agreement Treaty at Article 132, on the basis that there had been insufficient progress in the talks to complete them on time. But the UK has now turned this on its head and said that instead of foot-dragging and delaying progress until June so that we end up wasting another couple of years to allow Brussels more time to try and tie the UK up in knots, if there's insufficient progress by the June meeting, then let's just stop the process there and then and prepare to go our separate ways at the end of the year. So what the government has done is effectively advanced the implementation period timetable by 6 months and on our terms. So if we think the EU is not pushing hard enough for a deal, then that's it. And this, of course, has not pleased the EU at all. But not only that, after crafting Barnier's negotiating mandate to try and wrap the UK up in ECJ red tape and plunder our resources, the UK's stance on the future relationship from the document published today is a vision of a relationship based on friendly cooperation between sovereign equals, with both parties respecting one another's legal autonomy and right to manage their own resources as they see fit. Whatever happens, the government will not negotiate any arrangement in which the UK does not have control of its own laws and political life. That means that we will not agree to any obligations for our laws to be aligned with the EU's, or for the EU's institutions, including the Court of Justice, to have any jurisdiction in the UK. And on the important litmus test of UK fishing waters, the 30-page document says, the UK is ready to consider an agreement on fisheries that reflects the fact that the UK will be an independent coastal state at the end of 2020. And it goes on to say that any agreement would be in line with precedent for EU fisheries agreements with other independent coastal states. And also that any EU vessels granted access to fish in UK waters in annual negotiations would be required to comply with UK rules and would be subject to licensing requirements, including reporting obligations. But the one that the EU really will not like is Chapter 32, called Managing the Agreement, where it says, the agreement should include provisions for governance arrangements that are appropriate to a relationship of sovereign equals, drawn from existing free trade agreements, such as those the EU has with Japan and Canada. These should be based on a joint committee to support the smooth functioning of the agreement and provide mechanisms for dialogue and, if necessary, dispute resolution. The arrangements will reflect the regulatory and judicial autonomy of the UK, and accordingly, there will be no role for the Court of Justice of the European Union in the dispute resolution mechanism. This is consistent with previous free trade agreements concluded by the EU. Now that is the direct opposite of what the EU is insisting on. And there's nothing in the UK government statement about agreeing to level playing fields either. You can hear the frothing of the Brussels mouth from here. Now I would suspect that many experienced negotiators out there might be looking at the two sides' negotiating statements and wondering where the two sides will be prepared to compromise so as to reach a deal. But the language on either side regarding sovereignty over the UK couldn't be further apart. And those on the UK side sound more like red lines than negotiating start points. The UK government wants the UK to be a sovereign country under the sole governance of the UK government and parliament, while the EU wants the UK as a country to be under the sole sovereign governance of the Brussels bureaucrats and its courts. But as usual, the pro-EU establishment in the UK has crawled out from under its rock in the form of Ed Davey, the acting leader of the Liberal Democrats, who said, once again, we have seen the PM is more interested in brinkmanship and pleasing the Tory backbenches than in working with the EU to build a sustainable trading partnership. People are tired of the government's posturing. What they want is a well-functioning trading relationship with the EU that protects our jobs and businesses, not more self-imposed deadlines and threats of sabotaging the negotiation. Finalising an agreement by 2021 is already unlikely. Narrowing the timeframe even more is nothing short of reckless. The Liberal Democrats will oppose the government's negotiating stance and fight for the closest possible trading partnership with Europe. The Lib Dems, the party of rejoining the EU, hankering after the good old days of subservience and willing to sign up without scrutiny to absolutely anything their Brussels masters say. How on earth can Ed Davey call what the EU wants a trading partnership? But the rest of us have to be aware that much of these talks will be held behind closed doors, with only chosen snippets being leaked out by both sides as we go along. But the 30th of June, by which time, according to Boris, the talks must be going somewhere productive or we walk, is only 124 days away. So what we don't want to be hearing in those 124 days are rumours of any Boris backsliding. Anyway, if you want to hear more from me, please don't forget to subscribe and also press that little bell, or you won't get any notifications. Okay. And if you...
Very good. That's great. That's longer than I thought, but that's good. No, he's giving a very good outline of what is actually being negotiated. And there's a bare-knuckle fight going on in these negotiations. The other thing that Johnson played down, they're not doing it, doing negotiations in Brussels. They're making them come to London, and they're negotiating there with 11 different teams. And they didn't want to start the negotiations in Brussels at the end of March. We made sure they started at the beginning of February. And then he's upping the ante again. Plus, if it's all agreed, we pay over the £39 billion of agreed budgets, etc., which we shouldn't agree to. But anyway, but if there's no deal, they don't get their money. And he said if there isn't sufficient progress by the end of June, that's 3 months' time, April, May, June, he's going to ditch the talks and work towards preparing the country for a WTO existence, World Trade Organization, and they can sod off for their money. So they are seriously negotiating, which Theresa May did not do. But this country did not have a government. It was like a ship running without a propeller and an engine, drifting in the Atlantic. That's what happened in the UK for 3 years. And major issues like 5G and vaccinations and all these things were not dealt with. And the gutless trash that are journalists today, hardly 10% of them. And another thing I must do, I should have done it now, but Julian Assange, Patrick Henningsen, on UK Column News. Go to UK Column News, Patrick Henningsen's Friday's report there, last Friday, which is 28th of February, just yesterday, actually, where you are in the States. UK News, Patrick Henningsen gives a very good report on the total, 100%, no evidence against Assange. He's been tortured and degraded, and it's a sham. A sham trial, totally 100%, and he gives a very good report. And he also reports on his own channel, which is 21st Century Wire, Patrick Henningsen, very good American journalist operating here in Britain, and he is extremely thorough in what he deals with in all these situations. He really is, absolutely. But just to finish out on the European Union matters, it's 45 minutes now. There's one more piece there, Ken, we'll go to now, because it's only 8 minutes. It'll bring us up the next, will it? Maybe a little bit over the next hour. Jeff Taylor on the EU arrest warrant. That's the thing that's been hovering over us, and it's an outrageous thing where, without any evidence, they can send a warrant to arrest you in Britain. And if the people coming to arrest you shoot you by mistake, they have immunity from prosecution for life. But Jeff Taylor on the EU arrest warrant, Ken, that's eight minutes or so, okay? That's there.
Hello there. The government has now made it clear that it will not be looking to participate in the European arrest warrant as part of the UK-EU future relationship. Firstly, as ever, please kick that YouTube algorithm up the rear by giving this video a big fat like. And I'm always uploading new content, so please do check my YouTube channel daily. Now, the UK government issued its negotiating statement yesterday, and within it was the stated aim that the UK would no longer be a part of the European arrest warrant, and that any future trade agreement should contain a brand new EU-UK extradition procedure. Now, I do have to point out that although it's called the European arrest warrant, it only covers EU member states. So it's really the EU arrest warrant. Just try enforcing it in Russia, for example. The UK government statement itself said, extradition, The UK is not seeking to participate in the European arrest warrant as part of the future relationship. The agreement should instead provide for fast-track extradition arrangements based on the EU's surrender agreement with Norway and Iceland, which came into force in 2019, but with appropriate further safeguards for individuals beyond those in the European arrest warrant. Now, much has been said in the press that this is the UK withdrawing from the EU arrest warrant, but in reality, the arrest warrant is for EU members only. So by leaving the European Union, we automatically leave the EU arrest warrant system too. Yes, we could negotiate a special status as part of the future relationship deal, but I suspect that would entail massive concessions by us, as well as agreeing to have the ECJ oversee our extradition procedures. So it's right and proper as an independent sovereign nation that we agree a completely separate process with the EU, one that fully respects our independence. Now, the EU trumpets their arrest warrant as being free of political interference, saying, "Decisions are made by judicial authorities alone, with no political considerations involved." But a report on the EU arrest warrant and post-Brexit extradition procedures published by the campaign group Due Process paints a completely different picture. Due Process says that the European arrest warrant, the EU's fast-track extradition system, exposes every person under its jurisdiction to a serious risk of human rights abuses and miscarriages of justice. And in its report called "This Is Not Justice, The Cases That Show What Is Wrong with the European Arrest Warrant," they point to 15 cases that show the EAW is deliberately misused by some EU member states for political ends. Poor investigations have led to cases of mistaken identity and miscarriages of justice. People have been convicted in their absence, unable to mount a defence, without being informed a trial was taking place. And people have had their lives turned upside down in extraditions that have subsequently been laughed out of court as no crime was committed. Due Process was launched in 2017 in the Houses of Parliament to point out the injustices and the need for EU arrest warrant reform. Its patrons are the MPs Graham Brady and David T.C. Davies and the former MP Gisela Stewart. Now, to illustrate the point they make, I'll use the case of Andrew Symeo, as explained in this report. Symeo was accused of killing a fellow holidaymaker on the Greek island of Zante. He was extradited in 2009, held for more than 10 months in appalling prison conditions, which have been censured by organisations including Amnesty International before his trial, and repeatedly denied bail. Symeo was accused on the basis of statements made by two of his friends, who have since said that these false statements were beaten out of them by police, and that they had feared for their lives. In June 2011, Symeo was found not guilty by a Greek court, and in 2013 a UK inquest reached the same conclusion. Andrew Symeo's case alone shows three ways in which the flaws in the EAW system lead to abuses. Police brutality to extract false statements from witnesses. Excessively long pre-trial detention, which is a violation of human rights. Horrific prison conditions, which amount to a violation of human rights. And then there's the case of Keith Hainsworth, who was arrested in Calais as he and his wife prepared to return to the UK after a Paris holiday. And this was based on a Greek EU arrest warrant. He was then held in awful conditions in both France and Greece until he got to court, where the charges were thrown out when it realised that his hire car number had been given to the local police by a known mischief maker. Here's what the report says about the conditions in the jails he was held in. Hainsworth was detained in France in a cell with a hole in the floor for a toilet, dirty blankets and no pillow or mattress. And conditions were even worse in Greece, as Hainsworth was held in an overcrowded detention centre that had been condemned by the European Court of Human Rights. He was given no food and forced to pay for water before being loaded into a cattle truck transfer wagon for the 9-hour journey to court. And on the Catalonian independence movement, the report says that EAW requests have been repeatedly issued in what has been seen by many as politically motivated charges from a government that does not want to contemplate self-determination for Catalonia. The UK government is exactly right to let this horror show drop out of our legal system. It's something we should have opted out of permanently and never have joined in the first place. Anyway, if you want to hear more from me, please don't forget to subscribe and also press that little bell.
That's great, okay. Okie dokie, that's good. But now, Jeff Taylor is very, very fluent. Sorry, turn down my mic. He's very, very fluent, and he's an ex-naval officer, and he looks like he's full-time doing that, but he puts crystal clear reports out there. Absolutely, first rate, there's no doubt about it. But that's a measure, those two reports from him, that's the only two we have today. It makes it crystal clear about the negotiations going on, or pretty bare-knuckled with the European Union, Barnier and his team of people. And the arrest warrant, that's a despicable thing, that European arrest warrant. And it's used by on political purpose. And also, we're not going to be in the grip of the European Court, which is made up of 36 judges in rota. And 80% of them were never judges, right? And of 60, 70% were never lawyers. There are people who wrote legal reports and are ministers for justice and crap politicians like that. So the European Court of Justice is a totally rigged situation. The European Parliament, the MPs, have no power to make laws. No power to make laws. They're just token stooges. They can put in tiny amendments and they can speak for 90 seconds. The party leader can speak for 3.5 minutes. And as you saw in that piece way back there a few weeks ago, that lowlife... Mairead McGuinness cut off Nigel Farage on his last speech and his last day there because he was a few seconds over. But that's what the European Union is. And when you go there, you're not there to represent, in their eyes, the people you came from. You're there to represent the Parliament, the people who elected you. And another one, this is an absolute gem. In the European elections in Britain, there are 8 or 10 parties with candidates listed, but you cannot vote for the individual candidates. You hear that? You cannot vote for the individual candidates. Right? You vote, tick a party box, and depending on the order of the candidates, say 8 or 10, there's a 10-seater in South East England, which Nigel Farage is one of the key thing, and Daniel Hannan, and he usually brings in 2 candidates with him on the proportional representation system. His vote is so high, but okay, it's all over now. We're out of the European Union. But yeah, the parties that are allocated seats, it's how many votes you got at your convention decides, depending on what proportion of seats you get on the vote for the party vote that people voted for. It's an absolute bastardized system, proportional representation. If you want to see proportional representation, go to the Irish Republic. That is full proportional representation. And it's a very fair system. But first past the post here in Britain, it's extremely hard to get elected unless you're part of a major party. But in Ireland, they've just had an election that's completely fragmented now. They've got Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, Sinn Féin, got about the same number of seats each. And there's 21 independents and 5 or 6 other parties. It's beginning to look like Poland. But that's because of Varadkar ran the country as a globalist for the last 4 or 5 years and sucking up to the European Union. It's just appalling. But I'm delighted he got it in the neck because he's absolutely a vile creature, as far as I'm concerned. Totally and utterly. A low-life, disgusting globalist. And that's, as I say, I have 2 other reports later on today from Steve Turley, who I have a very high regard for. He's plotting with actual figures and data and election results, the recovery of conservative values and Christian principles right across the world. It's very, very interesting. I have two pieces later on with that. And also Erdogan's threat to open the borders in Turkey and flood Europe with immigrants. And he's supposed to be an ally of Russia, and there he is, his forces been into Syria to play military games, etc., etc. But that obscenity going on into Syria and children's being starved to death in cities where there's a war going on and are not properly reported by anybody, including that creature, Lise Doucette. You'll see her there on the BBC with her blue helmet, and she's put in there specifically to talk propaganda on part of the UN. That's what she does. Anyway, we'll go to the break, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Like to earn an extra $10,000 or more a month from the comfort of your home? We show you how to win with a home-based business opportunity. This could be one of the best financial decisions you ever make. Work from home, full-time or part-time. Plus, you'll never have to talk to anyone. Our professional sales team closes all your sales for you, and you keep 70% of all the sales made. You could be earning money while you're sleeping, shopping, working out, wherever you are, day or night. Our system goes to work for you. You can make a great income without any special computer skills or sales training. Plus, you get paid fast, within just 24 to 48 hours after our professional sales team closes a sale for you. Let us help you eliminate your financial concerns. You could be earning enough money to pay off debt, buy a house, a car, or whatever the case may be. We've got you covered. If you'd like to add an extra $10,000 or more a month to your portfolio, and you would like to know exactly what we're doing and how we're doing it, go now to www.getstartedwithus.com. That's www.getstartedwithus.com. Again, that's www.getstartedwithus.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.